The Weekly Connect
on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, yes, it's Stephen Scott back with you again on The Weekly Connect here on RNIB Connect Radio. Yes, this is your programme. If you're blind or partially sighted, it is the show for you. We talk about the good, the bad and the ugly of sight loss. But as we always say, it's not always good, it's not always bad, and it's certainly not always ugly living with sight loss either. So if you want to tell us about what life is like for you, the highs, the lows, and everything in between, then you can get in touch with this programme at any time. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk is our email address. This week on the show, we're talking about blind parenting, the highs and lows of that, and some of the difficulties. For example, like going on holiday.
Can you imagine the chaos to go with it, a blind mum going with their children on the airport? Because I fear that this would just be too much.
Or perhaps it's a problem closer to home that you have to put up with.
A friend of mine had a three wipe rule, and if he couldn't do it in three wipes, then it was time for a bath or a sink of water or whatever.
I think we're all wondering what that is, but I think we can probably guess. Yes, that is our topic this week on The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, we are talking about blind parenting this week. Thank you for joining us. And we're going to kick things off with a bit of a discussion around the topic of blind parenting. And we're hoping to answer some of those questions for you, whether you are fully sighted and you have a fascination with people who are blind or partially sighted having kids. And that is true. That happens quite a lot. Or perhaps you are visually impaired yourself and you're wondering, would you be able to cope with being a blind parent? Well, hopefully some of the answers will come up in our discussion this week. Joining us to have that discussion is journalist Emma Tracy, Dr. Sarah Bryan, and Technology for Life for RNIB Officer Mohammed Atif. Hi, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Steve.
Yeah, so really keen to talk this week about parenting, because this is an issue that comes up time and time again when we talk to people with sight loss especially, and there's so many different sides to this that I thought we should discuss it. Let's meet everyone here. We've got Emma Tracy with us. Hi, Emma.
Hello.
Now, you're a mum of one.
Yes.
And tell us how it is being a blind parent.
Gosh, that's a huge question. It's tough and wonderful. It's got its challenges, but as each new phase comes, we find ways around them and keep going, trucking along, as they say. I think it's the same as being a sighted person with a few differences. You know, it's roughly the same thing. I find that myself and my sighted friends have a lot of the same issues around the actual parenting aspect of it. It's really just some practical things that you need to get around.
Okay. Mohammed Atif is also with us. You're a dad of three, Mohammed.
I am indeed.
So you're a glutton for punishment then?
You could call it that, I suppose. I'm with Emma, really. In the main, the parenting side of it, there's not much difference between what a sighted parent would do or a visually impaired parent would do, really, to be honest. It is just a practical side of, especially when they're very young, looking after them, not tripping over them when they're on the floor, for example, not stepping on their toys, etc. But aside from that, obviously not being able to drive them around, say, to GP surgeries and whatnot, you know, kids get ill, especially when they're young. Aside from that, I don't think there's any much difference between what I do as a parent and what, another father would do, to be honest with you.
Hmm. I want to get into the specifics of how you both cope with having children anyway. I mean, you know, that's one of those big things that everyone thinks about when having kids. But we also have Sarah Bryan on the line. Hi, Sarah. It's interesting to talk to you, Sarah, because you don't have children. You're like me. You don't have kids. And it's been a bit of a conscious choice, I think it's fair to say, but you've also had some concerns about having children.
Yes. I suppose certain experiences in my own life have given me glimpses into what it might be like, and to be honest, they've rather put me off somewhat. I'm a guide dog owner, and my first guide dog in particular, she was an absolute handful. She would eat bits of fish bait in the park that had fish hooks in, and I didn't know she'd done that, so it was an emergency trip to the PDSA. She had diarrhea all over the floor, She managed to smash a window even. And I'm thinking, gosh, this is the sort of thing that would happen with kids, that the clearing up of vomit and diarrhea when you've got little ones, it's daily, it's not every now and then. And I needed quite a lot of support to get through some of these difficult times. And I'm thinking, do I really have the resources to look after a little one and to meet their needs? Because actually life's quite complex enough, especially with this particular dog that I had. It's a bit like having a kid anyway, having a guide dog.
Well, I was the same in that I got a guide dog first. So I've been blind from birth, but I didn't get a guide dog until I was 27 because I didn't feel I was mature enough to have a guide dog. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted children, and I did think that I was using the getting a guide dog as a precursor in terms of having to look after another being and having to pick up after them and be mindful of them. As it happened, I had an incredibly good dog, a very, very well-trained, well-rounded, very gentle personality dog who hasn't given me an ounce of bother at all. It still took a while to figure out what to do and how to do it and to stop being so anxious about it. But it being a parent for me was an entirely different kettle of fish. I thought having the guide dog would prepare me, and it did not. The vomit, diarrhea thing, that's not easy. But for me personally, if it's my child's, it doesn't feel as bad as if it's a dog's. And, you know, one of the big things to be mindful of if you have a dog and a child is dog sick and child connecting, which is something that is a horror. It's a horror. And, you know, yes, you do absolutely need more support when you have a child. And I have fought and worked towards getting that support. And I now have some help during the week when I'm not at work. I have some PA hours, which is really important. And, you know, my mom helps me a lot more than she used to. But for me personally, the child, having a child thing was, I had the instinct and I had the need to have children. I wanted to do that, and I felt in terms of being a parent and parenting, and myself and Mohammed have already talked about this, I felt that I would be, you know, I'd make a decent parent. And I knew that there would be physical aspects and practical aspects, but I also felt that I'd managed to get around all the practical and physical issues that I'd had in my life so far, so this would just be a new one to work through.
What about yourself, Mohammed? I mean, have you considered, did you consider this before you and your partner or your wife, I guess, had made the decision to have a child?
Yeah, I mean, I went to a mainstream school, and I've been around mainstream people all my life, and I just thought it was something natural, really, to be honest. And I always wanted to be a dad, if I'm honest with you. I try my best to be the best dad I can, you know. But because I went to a mainstream school and I haven't had a guide dog. And, I mean, what helps also is that my wife is actually fully sighted. So she helps out a lot as well, you know. And so we sort of muddle along together, as it were. And our children are quite, you know, they were actually very, very good, actually, when they were young. They were very good. They didn't sort of get ill too much, or there was no sort of trips to the hospital or anything like that. I mean, you do get that with children, with temperatures and all that kind of stuff. And my children are actually quite sort of very good, actually, in their younger days. And it was something that I always wanted to be. I always wanted to be a father. You know, I always wanted a family of my own.
And I think that's the case for a lot of people, though, isn't it? But at the same time, I think when you have a sight problem, and I can identify with where Sarah's coming from here, you know, I've often thought about this, you know, how will I cope? My wife and I are both visually impaired. We're not completely blind, but, you know, we would have difficulties with certain aspects of it. I mean, one thing I always think about is getting around, you know, just getting around. You know, the kid wants to go to dance class. I mean, you know, that's bad enough. But, you know, the kid wants to go to dance class and you've got to take them. And how do you get there with an irregular bus service or whatever else? There's a lot of challenge out there.
That is a challenge. My husband is visually impaired as well. He has a decent amount of vision, but he can't drive. And we live in a semi-rural area, so driving is quite important. We now have a really good take on the transport system and use it as much as we possibly can. we're also good at knowing where things are when they are walkable. I think when kids are older and have lots of activities, there is a rota system that happens anyway, so other parents will take at different times. And when it's your shot, as I say, I'd have arranged some more support, and I would imagine that that's what that would be used for mostly at that point, would be ferrying kids around, basically. And, you know, there is extra expense about being disabled and being a parent, and taxis come into play amount as well, you know, I think. But, you know, in terms of you, Sarah, I don't know what your story is. I don't know whether you wanted to have children or whatever, but I speak to sighted friends who don't have children and start thinking, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. I'm 34, going on 35, so that's what we start to do, I guess. And I say to them, absolutely, if you have any feeling that you don't want to have children, really consider not having them, because it is really tough, and it's not, you can't give them back. You know, a troublesome guide dog, you can actually, as you say, you can return. You can say, I can't cope with this. You can just, you have to go. Whereas a child, you can't do that. So I would be very mindful of people who haven't got kids and don't want them, and or don't think they want them for any reason at all, and say, well, that's okay, because it's a very personal thing, and it's a really tough thing to do. You know, I don't find it easy. I love it, absolutely love it, but I definitely don't find it easy, and I wouldn't like to think of what it would be like if I didn't want to do it.
Sarah, do you get much pushback from people when you express the opinion that you don't want to have children for this reason?
Well, yes, because I actually married a Catholic, and in the church there was a real sense of go forth and multiply, and people were going forth and they were multiplying and bringing their offspring with them to church, and people were going, oh, you'll be next, when Matt and I got married. But when I first met Matt, my husband, who he's fully sighted, we got together, and things happened quite quickly between us, so I let him know quite soon in our relationship, after about 3 months, I think it was, how I felt about kids, because I didn't want to hurt him if having kids was something he was really keen on doing. And he was, you know, totally, totally okay. And we talked about it early, because I have heard of couples where the one doesn't and the other does, and it can cause an awful lot of problems. And I didn't want to hurt him, or indeed get hurt myself, if our relationship wasn't going to be a goer. But he said if he was going to marry me, he'd marry me for me, not for my babies, which was very sweet. But yeah, I have a lot of people going, oh, you're being far too negative, you'd manage. And I'm thinking, I don't want to just manage. And I suppose what I'm thinking is, there's a lot of things in my mind. One of them is, one of the ways that I cope with being blind is by having everything very tidy, very neat, very orderly, and very structured. And a lot of that goes out the window when you've got little ones. I actually trained as a speech therapist initially, and I didn't cope too well in the paediatric clinic settings. Now, admittedly, they're not my kids, and I've not given birth to them and let them grow up with me and stuff, so I know that's different. But it gave me some insight into the sort of chaotic nature of little ones. And in the same way that Mohammed and Emma both said they had a real instinct, and even though there was toughness there in their lives, that this was something they really wanted and needed to do, maybe I just haven't got that, because I've achieved a lot of other things in life, you know, PhD, run my own business, so it's not that I would balk at challenges per se, but when I think about having children, all I can think of is the challenges. I can't think of many positives. I just think, how am I going to cut their toenails? How am I going to read their homeschool reports? You know, how am I going to cope with all the mess?
But is it perhaps the case, Sarah, and I tend to feel a little bit like this as well, because I think this is one of the problems that we have in life, that, you know, as soon as you get married, people always say to you, so, when are you having little ones?
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah.
And it's that's all you get. And I wonder, because of the challenges you're concerned about, maybe that is, maybe the pressure of from other people, and, you know, maybe that's driving a lot of these fears, because perhaps in your heart you maybe just don't want kids. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, that's more than okay.
Absolutely. I was going to say, you know, if you have even just a slight of doubt, just like 1 ounce of doubt, then probably don't do it. Because if you feel that you're not cut out for it, for example, then don't do it, honestly. Because it is a challenge. I wouldn't change what I've got for the world, you know what I mean?
Can I just ask one question?
Can I just jump in there, though, Steve?
Yeah.
Before you ask Stephen, even Steve, before you ask that question, you say if you've got any element of doubt, I think if you've got any element of doubt for your own personal reasons, don't do it. But if you have any element of doubt for visual impairment reasons, but you would actually like to for yourself, then go and educate yourself about how you would manage.
Absolutely.
So that you are fully educated and armed with the knowledge that you need so that you can make the decision based on what you want personally rather than based on your visual impairment. So, you know, if your instinct is screaming at you to have kids, but you're worried about how you'll cope as a visually impaired person, then, you know, Blind Mums Connect, which I know is featured on this program as well, is out there to help. We're here, you know, talk to people, find out all the little things, carrying your baby in a sling, using reins to get around, all those millions of little strategies that you can employ. Find out about all of those before making your decision.
And if not, enjoy the long lies.
And the cruises and stuff.
Yeah, and the holidays and all the fun things of life that you absolutely should enjoy.
Just to say, Steve, what Sarah said about reading school reports and going to parents' evenings and things like that, that's actually quite tough because not all the teachers know that you're visually impaired.
Mm.
And when you sort of trip over a chair before you sit on it, or you know, you miss their hand while you're shaking it or whatever, you know, that is a challenge. And when they point at various things in the parents' room, you know, such and such has done this and this, and this is his grades, and you can, you know, they turn the paper towards you and then you're expected to read it and then comment, that's a bit difficult.
But I sort of think you've got a personal responsibility there, though, Mohammed, to inform everybody,
of course,
to have the
headmaster,
mistress, principal tell all the teachers that you are a visually impaired person, because I do think there's a personal responsibility to get things in place for so that you can, like, have the school reports in printouts so that you can, or on in electronic format, and have the teachers have a tiny bit of awareness before you go to a parents' evening.
Can I just ask one final question to Emma and Mohammed? Are people surprised that you're both parents and blind?
No.
You don't experience that?
To that for me. I'm not sure why that is, but I've never been asked anything to do with my parenting or how do you cope or any. I've never been asked that by anybody. They just assume that I'm coping because my children are healthy and fit and they're happy. Mm. And I've had comments, you know, when you go to various schools and all that, and teachers, your children are, you know, a credit to you and you're doing a great job and all that, you know, but I've never been asked how I'm coping or what I'm doing differently or what my strategies are or anything like that at all. I've never been asked any of that.
Is that because you're a dad and you've got a sighted wife, I wonder? Because I'm
could be
the blindest of blinds and I'm the mother. And I get asked, people who know me are not surprised at all that I have a child. People who don't know me might be slightly surprised, but more interested to know, how do you do it? How do you do it? And to be honest,
Emma, to cut across you. I think the assumption is that because I'm the father, I don't get into the nitty-gritty of it, as it were.
Yeah.
And my wife does all that. I mean, that's not true, but
they think that.
You know, that's what people would assume, I assume, you know?
Yeah. Mm. But I don't mind people asking how I do it, because it's not easy. I have a very, very active, fully sighted boy toddler, and he climbs and runs and eats things, and, you know, it isn't easy. So people asking me, genuinely wondering how I do it blindly, is fine, because I don't even know sometimes.
Well, it's been a very interesting discussion. I really do appreciate all of you giving us your time. Emma, Mohammed and Sarah, thank you for joining us on the Weekly Connect.
Thank you for having me.
And you can add your voice to that conversation by emailing theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. What do you think about what you've just heard? Now, going on holiday, if you're blind or partially sighted, is tricky enough, let's be honest. But when you're taking kids along, how much more complicated can it be? Madeline Mann has been telling us her experiences.
Hi, I'm Madeline. I am a totally blind single mum of three children aged 4, 7 and 11. There's a big difficulty that all my family lives abroad and they want to go and see grandma and granddad and friends and stuff, and I thought, oh, I'm not able to take them on a holiday because, oh my God, can you imagine the chaos to go with it, a blind mum going with their children on the airport and all the luggage to go with it and all the organisation to do in advance of the travel. I kept saying to everybody, no, I can't go to Germany, really, no, I can't go on a holiday because I fear that this would just be too much. My youngest was 2, I think, and I had visions of her running away on the airport, me not finding her back. And it got really bad to the point that I would say, no, I'm not doing it. I wanted to go to Germany because we had my family, and I just wanted to go and have a bit of a break from my daily routine here in England. So I thought, well, you know, there must be ways of doing this, I'm sure, and I'm normally quite organized in my life. And so I developed little strategies. For example, did I make sure I knew where all my paperwork is, all the plane tickets, all the passports, having spare clothes with you on hand if something does go wrong. I always pack some snacks and food with me because finding a cafe where to find some snacks can be tricky. I arrived in plenty of time on the airport to do what I have to do and even, you know, to plan any trips to the toilet. You know, that always happens with little kids when you travel. The sky wasn't big enough for them all. When I booked my flight, I made sure that I have assistance booked. They offered me duty-free shopping, like to go in with me and help me through the duty-free shop. That was actually quite excellent. The children kind of walk alongside me and it worked really well. I had the youngest on my hand, made sure that the other one holds the youngest, the middle one, and then the bigger one is just walking behind us or next to us so that we don't have such a big train, really. I don't tell anybody that I didn't look on this passport and I didn't recognize that my youngest passport has actually expired. And I'd only found out when I stood on the airport ready to board that plane. Thought I had everything organized, and so they stood there and said, I'm really sorry, we have a bit of a problem. That passport has actually run out. Thank God they are German and I wanted to go to Germany, so I was able to board that plane. So everything is possible and I was able to go on a holiday. It was great. There's no stopping us now. The children are that little bit older and I think I established my confidence limits. I've got invitations to visit family in India, which I might or might not take them up on. I'm definitely going back to Germany again this year. And my children keep saying to me now, Mommy, look, you were so scared. And it was so cool. You know, is Disneyland next now, please? So I'm not quite ready to go to Disneyland yet. Took down the queen. If you think that you can't take the children abroad just yet, I mean, why not plan a trip to one of those action hotels which are geared up for partially sighted and blind people, and to help you and support you wherever you feel you might need that little bit of support, or somewhere within the country where you kind of know where you are, and then, you know, aim for the bigger afterwards when you feel that has worked actually quite well. You know, what is just a bit different. I mean, the children are happy whatever you do with them, I believe. All what matters for the children is just mummy or daddy has a little bit more time for me and things are a little bit different. It's not the home and my usual room. I think for me it was a learning curve and a good experience where I believe that confidence is the secret behind it all. I was not confident in the beginning. I didn't feel I wanted to go alone with my 3 children who were very young at the time, but them growing up and me becoming more confident with them helps so much. And I think now, yeah, there is no limitation. I would go anywhere, I think. I would go on short flights or longer flights, it wouldn't matter, because I know together we would make it, regardless whether I have sight or not.
Well, if you're one for taking the kids out on holiday, if you are blind yourself as a parent, then you might want to tell us your thoughts on that. Do you agree with what Madeline's views are? Do you think that there's another way to do it? Well, do get in touch. It's your programme. You can email us at theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect Magazine, our monthly membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from a dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, I mentioned just before the break there that we do love getting your emails. Here's one we get in from John this week.
It's 33 years since I was first a blind parent, or rather a partially sighted one with enough vision to do all the nappy changing stuff and direct a spoon reliably towards my baby's mouth. For the last 8 months, I have been a totally blind grandparent, and it's a very different experience. Not just because being a grandparent is so much fun with much less direct responsibility, but also because every little task is so much more complicated. I now rely on somebody else to clean up the poo, but I'm still there with the clean nappy and fresh baby grow, and I still have a go at feeding a range of pureed veggies and fruits, but it is very hit and miss, and I imagine little Millie wonders why her grandfather is trying to poke food down her ear or up her nose. People say she has my features and very round face, and if I let myself, I can get quite sad about not being able to see that for myself. But I am very much looking forward to telling and reading stories in the dark and doing all the voices I used to do with my own babies. I am very pleased that my son and daughter-in-law seem to be quite relaxed about handing their new offspring to me to carry down their steep stairs. We go very slowly so she can have a good look at all the pictures on the way down, or at least that's how I explain my extreme care not to do a Humpty Dumpty act. It sometimes frustrates me that we talk so readily about blind and partially sighted people in one breath, because, having been both, I would say there is as wide a gulf between total blindness and useful residual vision as there is between partial and full sight. Maybe that last comment is a bit provocative and not for the parenting topic. With good wishes, John.
Interesting thoughts there from John. Thank you for sharing, John. Appreciate that. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk is the email address where you can do exactly the same thing. Now, it is nice to be hearing from some blind dads this week. You know, often when we talk about parenting, you're talking about blind mums or mums in general. But actually, we are hearing from some blind dads this week. Here's two who decided to connect this week. James and Andre got together to discuss being blind dads.
So it's James Risden
and Andre Louis,
and we've come to talk about our experiences of being dads. So we thought we'd come and have a quick chat about how we've got on having...
I've got one more than you.
I met my wife Caroline in 2010, and then 3 years later we had a baby girl called Grace, who's now 20 months old. So you're a bit further down the line than I am. So my question to you, Andre, I guess, is does it get easier as they get older?
The older they get, the easier it gets, because they will be, okay, daddy, stop their stuff on the floor. Let's move it. Now you can go. I mean, I'll be just stepping out of a room and they'll see me coming from miles off, and they will be already making sure that my path is clear. And I wasn't even aware that there was stuff to make clear in the first place.
Yeah, it's really cool, because I keep coming downstairs now and treading on Lego or...
And it hurts.
It does. It does. There's lots of money in our swear box.
It's all about the fiddlesticks.
When we found out we were pregnant, I was 60% really excited and 40% absolutely terrified. Tried to do lots of reading and stuff, but a lot of stuff online and books were very much geared towards mums.
Right.
And there's, you know, obviously Mumsnet, and there's a Blind Mums Connect group, but I didn't find very much about dads. I don't know about you, but I didn't really have any expectations of parenthood or becoming a dad.
I think I did always want kids. It just felt right. my son Jake came along the same year we got married. Actually, to the point that my wife had already bought the wedding dress and then realised that she was too pregnant to fit in it, so I had swapped wedding dresses.
Oh, that's kind of nice, yeah.
Yeah, not for her dad, though. Her dad was quite upset. But it did all work out, and you know, it's great. And I have two wonderful children now, 7 and 4 years old.
Was that a gap so that you could get one out the way and out of nappies and sort of a bit house trained first, or?
Essentially, yeah, and it helped also just for us to get used to being parents.
How did you find feeding?
I wouldn't know if they were feeding or not. So we would hand them Jake and Alice spoons different times, and they would try to feed themselves. I think they sort of benefited from it because they get used to yucky and nice stuff early on.
I found the feeding with a spoon a bit difficult to start with because the baby food at the early stages is quite liquidy.
Oh, it's horrid.
It's a bit gloopy and a bit sort of, you know, doesn't need chewing. I found the mechanics of holding a jar in one hand, a spoon in the other, and then trying to find the baby's mouth with the other.
Hello, baby's head.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so we had some quite messy experiences. We wore quite a lot of our food. She learnt when I fed her that it was much more reliable if she grabbed the spoon, and it made life a lot easier because, you know, I could feed her without it all going over her cheeks and forehead. Dinner wasn't quite as fun as it could have been.
I do wish babies could talk from the get-go sometimes.
Wouldn't it be easier if they could just say, no, look, I've got beef stew in my eye.
Yeah.
Would you like it?
Would you like it?
What goes in must also come out, and nappies. Did you sort of make yourself scarce at that point?
Funny thing, actually. The wife said to me, you know, because a lot of us had bad acid reflux and whatnot.
Oh, right.
I'll save you the effort and the joys of runny nappies because I love you. So
oh, really?
I avoided nappies like the plague. Not necessarily because I had to, but because she just thought it would be better for all of us, because there's always going to be something you miss with that sort of thing.
There's no real easy way of doing it, but
there really
it is multi-sensory, isn't it? A friend of mine had a 3-wipe rule, and if he couldn't do it in 3 wipes, it was time for a bath or a sink of water or
a bucket
of cold water or whatever. That's something that I took on board, and I think that was quite good advice. I mean, I've done I think my fair share, but
yeah.
I will admit to sort of going to offer to do any number of other household chores.
Exactly.
Just at the time.
That's also me. I don't do well with that sort of thing, and sick as well.
Tell you what, darling, why don't I just go and wash up?
I will happily wash up.
Why don't I go and dust the skirting board or something equally
behind
useful?
The telly, so it takes me a long time to get in and a long time to get out.
You know, if it's my turn to take her to nursery, I'm desperate to get her out of the house before she, you know, needs changing.
And then you go back.
And then it's not my job, which is really naughty. And it's not because I'm lazy. It's just because I suppose I'm paranoid about not doing a thorough job.
And then you leave something on yourself, you won't see it. It's not easy being a blind dad, is it? And she's like, as long as you keep the internet and electrics running and wash up, then I'll let you off for all the nasty stuff.
How do you find people's attitudes to you when you're out and about?
Walking with them when they were ambulatory was sort of quite quick. Never really got much comments.
You never really got any comments,
The part of London I'm in, or whether just people just had their own things to do.
Yeah.
But no, unless it's nice things. People always, oh, what a lovely looking baby or whatever.
So. Yeah, partly because we're dads and then blind. I got lots of comments, or, oh, don't you do well, or aren't you doing well, or do you want a hand with this? And I think years ago I'd have maybe found it a bit condescending, but now I'm just like, I know, I'm brilliant. You've got a cane,
I've
haven't you?
I've got a cane, yeah.
Did you have a carrier for them in the early days, or a buggy, or did you pull the buggy?
We had a buggy, and Kirsten did a lot of that, and I'd come walk alongside it, holding it.
Yeah.
And she would be pushing it, I'd be holding it. And it would just get us all out of the house, you know, together, which is really important.
Yeah.
To spend time together and whatnot.
I decided to go for one of these backpack things. So it's a bit like a rucksack.
Yes.
I call it a set-top box, because it's like a box, and you just put her in the top of it. It's really great. And for getting around the underground in London, where there's lots of steps and escalators and stuff, it's really brilliant. So we've done quite a few day trips away to see family and relatives and stuff.
I'd love to do that.
It was actually a lot easier in the first year when she wasn't interested in getting out and walking.
Yeah.
She just loved coming out. But now, as soon as we get on the train, she thinks it's time to walk up and down the coach and go and see who's got an iPad she can play with. People at Christmas maybe buy them a puzzle or a book or a whatever it is. What did you do about that? Or did you just let Kirsten read them?
She likes reading, and I like to sit and make the noises, which is quite fun. And now Jake is, of course, having to read it himself.
Yeah.
It's also good for school, good for homework.
Yeah.
And they get tasked to do that sort of thing. But puzzles and games, we like all that sort of stuff. And now we have stairs, because we lived in a, you know, a flat.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
So now we have stairs, we're able to play games, you know, like throwing things up the stairs. And I bought a drone recently, a very cheap £20 drone, and Jake likes to fly that. We've done, like, Wii bowling, family bowling, you know,
yeah, yeah,
indoors.
Yeah.
So much fun.
So you don't feel like not being able to see has kind of inhibited your...
Funny,
your
no, I haven't.
...playing or reading or, you know, watching TV with them or whatever else?
No, I don't really. It's
oh,
funny.
That's
and,
good.
Because I've got a piano there, I like to play the TV themes for them and
yeah.
teach them how it goes. And
yeah, yeah.
They think it's funny.
Grace is a complete bookaholic at the minute. What we've decided we're going to do is get some of her relatives and grannies and granddads and aunts and uncles to read some of the books to her on the Pen Friend so that she can hear their voices as well. As a blind dad, where does it get easier and where does it maybe get more difficult?
It's funny, actually, because I've always found them exceptionally helpful. And it amazes me. In our old house,
yeah.
we had a big rug in the middle of the living room, and toys had to be kept on the rug at all times.
Yeah.
For safety, for theirs and for mine. So they quickly learned that if it wasn't on the rug, Daddy was going to take it away.
Yeah.
If it's not where it should be, I've got to put it in a bag.
Yeah.
Pretend
yeah.
it's gone. And then they'll be like, no, I want it back, but it wasn't where it should be.
Yeah.
So you have to earn it back.
It's not a bad thing to be tidy.
No, it's not. And when we had stairs, you know, keeping stuff off the stairs, you can't just dump your doll in the middle of the staircase and me not trip on it. But you know what? They've come out well adjusted. I can't complain. Really no complaints.
And well.
Not only that, they're great children, so, you know.
I shall come to you for more advice, though. It sounds like you've got it sorted.
I'd like to think we do. It's probably more down to the missus than to me, but you know what? We're all right.
Great to hear your thoughts, guys. Thanks for getting together and talking. You can do the same. All you've got to do is get out your smartphone and hit the record button on one of your apps on there. You've got voice memos if you've got the iPhone. Or if you've got one of those dictaphones lying around, I've got one. It's an Olympus one. And I've used that a couple of times to record some conversations. You know, knowingly, I should point out. But yeah, if you want to get together with some people, have a bit of a chat, then please do. You can email it in to us at theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. If you're not sure how to do that, email us anyway and tell us what you're thinking of doing and we'll do our best to help you out. It's your programme. This is The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Good to have your company this week. We are, of course, talking about parenting on this show and if you are thinking of having children, one of the things you might be looking for is a little bit of support in the areas of, well, first of all, should you have kids? Do you want to have kids? And secondly, perhaps more importantly, those all-important hints and tips to get you through being a blind parent. Well, there's one society out there that's aiming to help blind mums, and dads as well. It's called Blind Mums Connect, and it's our Society of the Week.
Hi, I'm Kim. I've been blind since birth, and I'm involved with an organisation called Blind Mums Connect, so I'm often the first point of contact for everybody.
I'm Sally Clay. I am visually impaired. I'm a mummy of a five-year-old. When I was about 12 weeks pregnant, a friend of mine said you should get in contact with them. I think at the time it wasn't Blind Mums Connect, it was just literally an emailing list at that point. And so it really wasn't the big thing that it is now.
We now have a website, blindmumsconnect.org.uk. We're approaching 200 members. A lot of that's just done by word of mouth through our Facebook group, email list, and we run various Skype groups.
What I got out of it straight away was on the phone chats. So the first thing that I was interested in was, how the heck am I going to carry this baby around? Because I use a white cane, I've got no useful vision at all. Through Blind Mums Connect, I met up with some girls and they showed me the sling that they had and it was absolutely brilliant. And I used that until my daughter was four. So that was one of the things that they helped me with, find a good solution for carrying my daughter.
It's just about knowing other people and talking to other people that are going through what you're going through. Sometimes it's those extra little things like, how do you make up formula when you've got no sight at all? I feel, for me, Blind Mums Connect has been an absolute massive, massive help, which is why I'm now so heavily involved, because when I was pregnant and when I had a newborn child, my mum would help or my friends would help, but none of them quite knew what I was going through, not being able to see, and how things are just sometimes that little bit different.
The other thing was, most importantly actually, how to make up a bottle, because I didn't know how to do it. And I was really worried because I'd planned to breastfeed and it hadn't worked out. And I thought, oh God, I don't know what I'm going to do, because I have no idea how I'm going to make these bottles up without giving my daughter gastroenteritis or something horrible. What I did was to email the list, and they sent me a whole load of sheets that they'd made up on how to make formula when you can't see, and also how to feed the baby when you can't see with a bottle. You can just weigh it out on the talking scales, and generally they're pretty accurate. I mean, they're not 100%, but I don't think always sighted people get it 100% accurate. And I made loads of bottles that way. I felt really confident. And also with the way that I fed my daughter, I fed her in a bit of an unconventional way. So she was sitting on my knee with her back facing my tummy, and I could feel her face then, so I knew exactly where the bottle was going. I wasn't going to poke it in her eye.
We generally use to make connections. Our Facebook group is incredibly busy. People want to make friends. They want to be able to share tips. They want to ask questions in a space that's safe with people that understand. And then to move that on and to form friendships. And I think that's what we're really here for, is to bring people together.
They have these amazing Skype groups as well. There's mums of all age kids. There's mums with teenagers. I think there are a couple of grandmas as well. Everybody from tiny babies or bumps even.
I get very affected by people who are on their own, or people who have suddenly lost their sight and then suddenly feel that they're not going to be able to cope with a child. That upsets me a lot on a personal level, because nobody should ever really feel like that. I've been very, very affected by people who are just totally isolated, people who have gone through abuse, people who have had to fight to prove that they can look after their children just because they're blind, and that shouldn't be happening, and it's incredibly sad. I often feel how lucky I am that I didn't go through that, when people can wake up with no sight and a small child, or lose their sight in pregnancy. And that must be absolutely terrifying. And those people and their strength and how they find us, they show determination. We've had people who can't use technology but have made an effort to learn so they can be on our Facebook group because they want the support. And I think that's pretty incredible.
Blind Mums Connect suggested that I get a single room in the hospital, and that I get taken around the hospital and shown where to go, and, you know, familiarised with the environment. And actually that proved to be really useful, because I was in there for 10 days after Alice was born. So I was in there for ages. And if I hadn't known where I was going, I would have been completely out of it and I wouldn't have been able to do anything. And also the single room really helped, because it meant that I was familiar with it and I wasn't having to worry about knocking into other people's beds, or, you know, treading on people's babies or whatever, you know, that it was really, really helpful. I've always been very lucky that I've been able to get out and about. When I first had my daughter, I lost all my confidence with getting around. I thought, oh my God, I've got her in this sling, and if I whack her into something, I'm, you know, and I didn't want to go out and I didn't want to do anything. And you get this real fear, panic response. And this is from somebody who's really confident. Since then, I have been involved with some of the Skype groups and helping out new mums by giving them the benefit of my experience and how I went through the process of becoming much more confident with my daughter and learning. It was almost like learning how to walk again. The way they teach breastfeeding in the hospital is like not VI friendly at all. They give you all this advice that basically involves sight, and you can't do it that way. The breastfeeding peer support is really important, because we can breastfeed, and loads of blind people do, but they do it in a little bit of a different way, and that is very well known by the team at Blind Mums Connect and not well known to health professionals at all.
I don't want people to go through what I went through with feeling alone. I want people to know that there's something out there, and there's always somebody around that can give advice or have a chat.
Blind Mums does have a really important role to play, because no one's going to get what it's like for a blind person to go into an echoey church hall with toddlers all running around, and how to find their way around it and meet other mums, and no one's going to quite get that like another blind mum. And they've also got partially sighted mums on there as well, and their issues again are different, because they need to be able to see their children, and so they need to get the kids in high-vis clothes or whatever. You know, so many different things and so many different levels of sight that are all covered by that one group.
Right now, I think the future for us is we just want to get bigger and better. We want to get more people involved. But I think more than anything right now, we just want people to spread the word, and we just want to bring people together.
And of course, don't forget, we'll put all the details up of Blind Mums Connect on the RNIB Twitter and Facebook pages. You can get RNIB at RNIB Radio, simple enough, or at RNIB Radio if you want to keep up to date with what the radio station is doing. You can, of course, always keep in touch with us, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. That is our email address. Now, we're talking about blind parenting this week, but let's not forget our four-legged friends. Yes, while we're talking away about those two-legged ones that drive us all mad, well, what about those four-legged ones? Diane Woodford speaks to us this week in our Pause for Thought.
My name is Diane Woodford. I'm registered blind and I'm a guide dog owner. My guide dog at the moment is called Darcy, and my original dog was Hattie. I lost my sight at 38. Became a guide dog owner about a year later. What I found very interesting is this cross between the two dogs. Once I lost my first dog, my children were so used to mum being with a dog and feeling that mum's safe when she's out with a dog and the dog's looking after me. When I was without a dog after the retirement of my first one and waiting for my second one, I was very much surprised at how the children didn't feel as confident when I was out and about. The concerns for me grew quite rapidly to the point where my youngest boy, who was 10 at the time, was very upset at school, and it all came out that he was upset because he worried about mum because she didn't have a guide dog to look after her. The confidence guide dog gives you as a parent is really important. I find if I'm walking in the street with my boy, I can talk away to him, knowing that Darcy's on the lookout for things which I wouldn't pick up. And I don't need to worry about that because I know that she's in control of that. Having a guide dog in the family, obviously the children loved her to bits. A family of children and dogs are always really interesting. We already had a pet black Labrador who's still with us. He's heading on to 14, so he's getting a bit old now. So they were used to having a dog around, so that, I suppose that was really useful. There was a little bit of a difference between this is a guide dog, it's working for mum. Obviously, getting the two dogs used to each other to start with was a bit strange. Although Hattie's retired, she still comes round because my daughter has her and she's only round the corner. So they love each other to bits, the dogs. And Darcy's sort of fitted in the same sort of way, really. When I first got Hattie, one of the things she had to learn was Jamie was at preschool nursery. And you used to have to take the children in, take their hat and scarf and gloves and coat off and put them on the pegs. So basically they had to teach Hattie. She had to walk through the door with 30 other toddlers and, you know, sort of 3 to 4 year olds, all trying to take the coats off and put the coats on the peg. But they taught Hattie where Jamie's peg was. And that was amazing because then I could actually take him in. You know, it wasn't a case of needing a member of staff to come and take him off me. I was like all the other mothers. I went and took him, put his coat on his peg, took him to his little group area. And that was really important to me at the time because I didn't want somebody just to come and collect him at the door. I wanted to be the mum like every other mum. I did one day walking and the headmistress said, Mrs. Woodford, do you realise your child is green? And I went, green? Is he not well? And she went, no, he's painted himself green. And he'd been painting before we'd gone to the nursery and he'd painted himself literally from top to bottom green. And then I took him into the toilet area and was trying to clean it off and she came for me and she went, you may need to do that to your dog as well. Your dog's green. My children are quite proud that mum's a guide dog owner. The school playground for one. Well, I'm the only mum who was allowed in with a dog, so I think that was quite a proud moment when the primary school and your mum's allowed to bring her dog in because her dog's special, but all the mums with dogs have to wait at the gate. Yeah, it made us a little bit different as a family, but in a good way.
Well, that's almost it for Weekly Connect this week, but we have one more conversation for you, and I think you'll like this one. This is from two people who have just joined RNIB as connectors. These are people who go out in their local communities and try and get more blind and partially sighted people like themselves to get together, to help each other, to learn new things, to try things, whatever it might be. You can basically do whatever you want as an RNIB connector. Well, we're going to hear from two of them now. I sat down with Kat and Ross to find out why they got involved.
I was kind of thrust into it initially. I went to the RNIB office in Bristol and was talking to one of the ladies that used to be the employment coordinators, and she saw Sophie Fox, the Southwest Connect coordinator of CCF, and suggested that she would be a good person I talked to. And when I started talking to Sophie and she explained the connector role, it sounded really interesting and something that I really wanted to get involved with and see how far I could help out and take it. And kind of gone from there, and we've started to organise our first Connect meeting down in Bristol, and hopefully that will get us off the ground and give us a good place to start to expand Connect in the Southwest.
Okay, excellent. What about you, Ross?
I became a connector mainly because I was just so sick of all the inequalities that people who live with sight loss get. I was in Glasgow on a night out and I didn't use my symbol cane at the time because I felt quite nervous using it, but I started to get rejected from nightclubs and get quite abusive comments from bouncers by saying, accusing me of being drunk because I can't look at people right in the face, and that's because I can't see them. And then I eventually started using my cane, and all of a sudden, bouncers don't even question me, and that kind of irritated me because I thought, because I was actually told one time that I needed proof of my disability to get into a bar.
Wow.
And it irritated me so much that I actually spoke to, I got in touch with the RNIB, and I actually got in touch with the one of the people who deal with discrimination. And it was actually Holly Wilson from the Glasgow office who said, you know what, you might be interested in some of our volunteer work. And then, long story short, I got connected with Connect, because I kind of feel like companies should be trained into, obviously I would never like to think someone would lie about a disability, but to ask someone for proof of a disability is disgusting, and I wanted to get involved so that I could educate people, educate companies on basically being aware of disabilities and being a bit more aware of things.
Okay, so different reasons for getting involved.
Yeah.
But, you know, both of you very keen to try and further the cause of blind people and to discuss the issues and all of that and raise awareness, Kat.
Yeah, it would be really good. My partially sighted journey is still in the early stages. My diagnosis is still pending. To raise awareness of VI issues in general is going to be really good, and to encourage people with visual impairments to get out and not be isolated, because having a sight problem is not the be all and end all, and it's not the end of somebody's life. It's just the start of a new one, and working away around what they can't see so that they can still enjoy life and get out there and do the things that they enjoyed maybe before they had the sight loss. So yeah, I'm looking to really get involved and organise activities and just get people more inclusive in normal society as such, and hopefully it should be really good and exciting.
Is this the same for you, Ross? Are you experiencing sight loss over time, or have you always had vision loss?
I was born with with visual impairment. I am totally blind in my left eye and severely sight impaired in my right. So I've lived with it my whole life, and that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to be a part of Connect, because I, in the past year or so, because of my symbol care and because of the RNIB, I've become more confident and more, feel like more myself than I ever have in my whole life. And I want other people to feel that way and feel like their disability should actually be an advantage, because it makes them a unique person. At the same time, it should make them feel that they're part of everyday society, because a disability is not something that should hold you back. It should be something that you should embrace and be proud of.
Yeah, but as you know yourself, Kat, you know that takes a long time to get to that stage. As you say, the journey you're on already is you're kind of there, aren't you?
Yeah, it's always going to be an ongoing process. I mean, it's never we can't ever tick a box and be like, right, I've made it to this point, that's it, I can't progress any further. It's always going to be a progression, a journey, no matter where we are on it. I know certainly personally, my sight loss has only been found in the past few years, but the doctors believe it's something that I've had from childhood. So it's, yeah, bringing that awareness around that it does affect people of all ages, and it's not just something that is congenital from birth or an old age illness. It affects people at all stages of their lives and from everywhere across the world. So yeah, being more inclusive and open to getting people involved is going to be a good thing.
And again, that whole thing about age as well, isn't it? That's a big thing. I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, sight loss only affects older people, but, you know, you two are young folk, you know, you don't, you know, you go against that grain of that thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, bouncing off of what Kat said about that she's just discovered her sight loss in the past few years, since I knew since I was born about my sight loss, I feel like I'm still on a journey as well, even though I am a lot more confident in myself and in, you know, asking for help and seeking support. There is still a lot of hurdles that I've got to jump over to get to a place where I, you know, where I can be really, really comfortable.
Thanks, Ross and Kat.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks to Ross and Kat for sharing why they became RNIB connectors. We'll meet more connectors next week on the programme. Also on the programme next week, we're looking for you to help us. Yes, we're going to be talking all about health and fitness. Yeah, and this is where I really need your help. One area I could really do with some assistance. So if you are out there, and it doesn't have to be, you know, pounding the streets every day or, you know, having a guide runner or all that. I mean, that's great and we'll talk about that. But, you know, if you're getting exercise in a simple way, then do tell us about it. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Get in touch, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. It's your show. Remember, Mondays at 1, it's The Weekly Connect. Thanks for listening.